Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So Uddhava is brilliant student of Brihaspati, a respected advisor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna's friend. And we heard how Krishna appointed Uddhava to remain in this world. Madvayonam lokam grahayan ihatishtatu. I want him to remain on this earth in order to teach the confidential knowledge about myself. So Uddhava was appointed by Krishna in the end as spiritual master, acharya. One becomes acharya by being appointed, just like a king is anointed, is coronated. So the previous acharya appoints his successor. Krishna has appointed Uddhava his successor in the matter of the transmission of transcendental knowledge. But every guru is somebody's disciple. Just like every father is someone's son. So Uddhava got his spiritual education, of course, from Krishna himself and various sources. I don't know whether Brihaspati is his Diksha Guru or someone else. The gopis didn't give him Diksha. The gopis are his Shiksha Gurus. But here's one case, at least, where the relationship with the Shiksha Guru, is particularly significant. Uddhava learns the lesson of his life by his association with the gopis. They didn't teach him systematically. Not only did they not give him a formal initiation, they didn't teach him out of any textbooks. There was no syllabus. The gopis were spontaneously expressing their intense separation from Krishna. Especially we hear the Brahmara Gita, the conversation of Srimati Radharani with the bumblebee. This is where Uddhava received his instructions. And from seeing, meeting the gopis, hearing from them, this taught him the most confidential secrets of devotional service. Ramya kachid upasana vajavadu vargena yakalpita. The most favorable way to worship the Supreme Personality of Krishna, Araju Bhagavan Vajesha Tanayas, Krishna is the supreme worshipable object. Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam, in the place where you'll find him in his original mood, is Sri Vrindavan. And in that Sri Vrindavan, there are varieties of ways to worship Krishna, moods. Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti, as stated by Rupa Goswami in the first verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That means that Krishna has different relationships with different devotees, his variety, and that's his perfection. But among all the different ways that Krishna is worshipped in Vrindavan, the one that pleases him the most is that manifest by the gopis, the young gopis, who are his girlfriends. So they are the Shiksha Gurus of Uddhava. This is where he learned his postgraduate education. So Uddhava spent the night at the home of Nanda Maharaj. In the morning, although his chariot arrived unnoticed because of the dust raised by the hooves of the cows coming home, so when he arrived in the evening, others did not notice him. But in the morning, his chariot was noticed, parked in front of Nanda Maharaj's house. The young gopis thought maybe this is Akura, but then they saw that no, this is Uddhava who has come. Or at first they saw, as described in the first two verses of this 47th chapter, who is this anyway? It looks just like Krishna, dressed like him. Where did he come from? Whose servant is he anyway? So at first they didn't recognize him. They're not that familiar with who's who in Dwarka. And they shyly greeted him, but spontaneously they saw this is someone we can trust. Normally, Krishna's intimate girlfriends don't consort with men at all, anybody else than Krishna. This is unusual. But they naturally recognized Uddhava as Krishna's direct representative, not only because he looked like Krishna, but they could sense there's no reason to feel, just keep a distance from this person, that he's no threat. In fact, whatever he expresses is Krishna's intention. So verse 3 describes that they greeted him in a shy way, and they sat down with him in a quiet place. And understanding that he must be have been sent by Krishna with a message, they started to question him about Krishna. Their idea is Krishna must have sent you to pacify, to give pleasure to his parents, Nanda and Yashoda. What other business would Krishna have back here in Vrindavan, now that he's living in the city? He certainly doesn't have any more business with us young girls. He's got the sophisticated women of the city to associate with. I'm sorry, is there a problem here? Should I take the big bag off? Is that okay? Yeah. But this is their ecstasy. They're assuming that Krishna can't be concerned with us anymore. And therefore they speak philosophically on this point that it's natural to have attachment for your family, but any friendship with someone who's outside the family cannot be a permanent thing. So we're not, everyone in Dwarka has blood relationship with Krishna, or blood, or by marriage, or by blood relationship. Bandhava and Bandhu Bandhava, two different words. So the blood relations are one through your parent father's side. But when you marry, you get another, a whole set of in-laws. That is relationships by marriage. So Krishna was related to practically everybody in Dwarka, either through blood or through marriage. That's not the situation in Vrindavan so much. Especially Krishna and the gopis, they're all married to other men. Their relationship with Krishna is simply on the level of pure love. So, but they're philosophically lamenting over this. Now the Mathuravasis, they've got Krishna captured by their family ties. Krishna has no reason to be attached to us anymore. And they're arguing that friendship for other than one's family is just fleeting. Just like a prostitute gives up a man when he runs out of money. The citizens of the state abandon a king if he's incompetent. Students show respect to their teacher, but when their education is done, they just walk away. And priests performing a sacrifice, they give up the sponsor of the sacrifice. Once they receive their remuneration, they're finished. A bird leaves a tree when there's no fruit left. Guests who have come to your house, after you feed them, they go away. Animals leave a forest that burned to the ground. And a lover, after enjoying a woman, abandons her also. So this is how they view Krishna. He's used them, and now he's abandoned them. And they describe, well, the gopis have work to do. Nobody in Vraja is idle, especially the women. The men may sit around and do nothing, but the women don't. They have to do all the household work. So not just the old women, the young women too, even little children, they're expected to help out in the family chores. So these young girls, they have plenty of work to do, but they, just because Uddhava has arrived, they forget everything. And they tell Uddhava how this is very nice. They were able to constantly remember Krishna's pastimes as a Kaishurya and Balya, in his childhood and his youth, his pastimes in childhood and youth. Then we read the description of one of the gopis having an apparently insane conversation with an insect, a bumblebee. This is only 10 verses long, but it's one of the most intimate sections of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the Divyonmada, the divine madness of Mahabhava, is actually being described by Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami, in order to be able to do this, has to be himself very highly elevated in the devotional path, to be able to understand and explain to others this very intimate devotional service. He has to be highly qualified. He's uniquely qualified to do that. But he's tactful. He does not mention the name of who's talking here. He doesn't mention the name of Srimati Radharani in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, some critical persons reject our worship of Radha and Krishna that is not supported by Srimad Bhagavatam. But anybody who knows the actual science of rasa can analyze the moods expressed by this anonymous gopi and identify who she is, just like the police can take your thumbprint and identify you, or some blood sample. So just by a sample of the rasa, instead of a blood sample, a rasa sample, someone like Krishna Chakravarti can tell you exactly who's talking. So this is identified as Srimati Radharani, and he analyzes the 10, it's only 10 verses, the Brahmara Gita. He analyzes that there are 10 different kinds of jalpa, or prajalpa, of not the kind of prajalpa that we're familiar with, but this is transcendental, apparently incoherent talk. That's an expression of Mahabhava, and it shows itself in 10 different varieties, which I'm not familiar with. It's described, you can read the commentaries on the 10th canto. I think even in our BBT edition we discuss it somewhat. The 10 different kinds of prajalpa, they have different names, anajalpa, sanjalpa, and so on. And each one of these verses, in each one of these verses, the gopi is manifesting one of these different ecstasies. But I can't give you an expert analysis of it. I don't even remember what they are. She is showing anger at Krishna, or disappointment. She thinks it's just a bee wandering in the garden, innocent bee, but she, presumes that he must have been sent by Krishna to try to negotiate with her. But she's very disappointed and angry at Krishna for having left them, the gopis. So your Prabhupada describes it in his rendition in the Krishna book, you're an unreliable servant of an unreliable master. So better you don't even come near me. You're smeared with the kumkum powder from these ladies of Mathura. You know, Krishna made us drink the nectar of his lips and then abandon us. How is it the goddess of fortune is interested in him? This is hard to understand. He must have, with his deceitful words, he must have enticed her. Don't sing to me, Bumblebee. Don't talk to me about Krishna. You go sing these songs to his new girlfriends. We don't want to hear it. And she goes on. And her complaint is that, you know, I'd rather you talk about something else, but there are so many things that remind us of Krishna. The what are they listed here? Anyway, all these udipanas remind us of Krishna. It's impossible for us to forget him, no matter how much we try. How can we forget him? Our hearts were completely stolen away by his charming gestures, his smiles, his glances, his words. So please, and then she finally, in the last verse, just calls out helplessly to Krishna, Hey Nata, Hey Ramanata, Vrajanat Arati Nashana. O Master of the Goddess of Fortune, Rama. O Master of Vraja, O Destroyer of your devotee's distress. Please save your Gokula from the ocean of misery. I skipped a page. I'm actually reading from the wrong page. Sounds nice, but I'm reading from the wrong page. This is the Gopis. I jumped to the last thing about the Udipanas in that prayer. That actually is Gopis responding to Uddhava after he gives the message. I jumped over a page. The Gopi talked about how Krishna is a cheat, how he, in a very illegal way, he killed Vali, the brother of Sugriva, shot him in the back from behind a tree. He disfigured a woman, Surpanaka. He cheated and mistreated Bali Maharaj in the form of Vamana. We shouldn't maintain friendship with such a person. Let's not even talk about him. But people in this world are so unfortunate. They just hear the nectar of his pastimes and they become addicted. And because of this horrible addiction, they abandon their homes and go wandering, begging in the forest. We trusted him. We trusted what he told us. And as a result, we suffered. The gopi asks, now he's living in Mathura. Does he remember his father's house? Does he remember his cowherd friends? Does he remember us, the gopis? And when will he again put his hand on our heads? So ultimately, she's asking Uddhava, is Krishna going to come back? Are we ever going to see him again? Uddhava, it's his turn to respond. He has to deliver the message that Krishna gave him, especially for the gopis. He first praises them. What he's seeing is astonishing. So he tells them that you are really the most fortunate people in the world. Your life is completely successful. Simply because your hearts and minds are completely dedicated to Krishna. Devotional service is normally obtained by various kinds of difficult sadhana. But you, simple ladies, have attained a stage of a level of devotional service even the demigods can't aspire to. Because you abandoned everything. You sacrificed everything for Krishna. Of course, you're just simple ladies. You don't have much to sacrifice, someone may say. just you have your families and your cows and your children. Yeah, maybe a small plot of land to grow some vegetables on. But you gave it all up to Krishna. You abandoned your families. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that's not the purport, not Prabhupada's purport, that the gopis actually didn't literally abandon their families. They remained living with their families. They carried out their household responsibilities, but they gave up all attachment. That's what the real renunciation is. Not an external show, and not a rejection or abandonment of responsibility, but an abandonment of attachment. That's what makes one fully surrendered to Krishna. You don't become surrendered to Krishna, you don't impress Krishna by becoming irresponsible, but by becoming completely dependent on Krishna and free of all material considerations. And that's what the gopis did. Therefore, no matter what anyone else may judge, you have the adhikar to be situated in the highest level of love of God. To us that is obvious, because that's what we've been taught by Prabhupada. This is our philosophy. But other Vaishnavas don't always understand this. That the Krishna consciousness practiced by these young women of Vraja is the highest spiritual perfection. Many others outside our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya cannot understand that. And then Uddhava delivers the actual message that Krishna gave, which again, just like what he told to Nandi and Yashoda, it sounds like dry knowledge, jnana. But Vishnu Chakravarti points out that there's a confidential message hidden inside those words. He says, "There is no separation from me. Don't lament. For my devotees, there is no separation. Because I'm in everybody's heart. I'm in their vital air. I'm in their senses. I'm everywhere. There is no separation." Now that, on the surface, is not what the gopis want to hear. You know, just meditate on me as a super soul. You'll be satisfied. They won't accept that. They refused that from Krishna himself at the time of the Rasa dance. But there is a secret message that you all have a very intimate connection with me. Nothing can break that. I'm always present with you because of your love. We were discussing the other day about this term Vishwamurti, which seems to be the almost impersonal universal form, but it's also the realization of an intimate devotee of Krishna who sees his original form, Govinda form, everywhere. Wherever he looks, he sees the form of his worshipable deity. This is the level of realization of the gopis. But also, because I'm your lover, we'll never actually be separated. And we understand that Krishna is always present in Vrindavan, always performing his pastimes in his aprakrita lila. So Uddhava is actually reminding the gopis, although in the external visible pastimes, Krishna's gone, and I can't promise he'll come back, but he is here with you in his invisible pastimes. Bhagavatam doesn't talk about that openly. This is more of a mysterious thing, the fact that Krishna has two kinds of pastimes, visible and invisible. Bhagavatam is a chronological narration of his visible pastimes that Shukadeva is giving us. One chapter after another, pastimes in each chapter in chronological order. This is a narration of the prakrita, visible pastimes. But there, between the lines, in statements like this, we do see hidden description of Krishna's eternal invisible pastimes. So this statement that seems to be a change-up, that Krishna is offering them jnana instead of what the gopis really want, actually, the secret message of the Bhagavatam is contained in it, that Krishna is eternally present with his intimate devotees in his invisible pastimes. Therefore, there is no actual separation, and there's no real pain in that separation. So he tells them, and he explains also, that I went away from you in order to make you think about me more, in order to intensify your love for me. That's another reason. When a lover is away, the woman who he loves thinks more about him than when he's present. So please, go on and think of me all the time, and you'll regain me very soon. Don't you remember that some of the groups of you were not able to join me in the Vasalila? Some of the gopis were kept trapped in their homes by their husbands and weren't allowed out. The statement of the Bhagavatam is that they gave up their bodies and went to Krishna, but that's not to be taken literally, not that they died, but that their ecstasy reached such a peak that they became fully absorbed. Even though they couldn't join the visible pastimes, they entered Krishna's invisible pastimes. Not necessarily meaning that they left their bodies. So if they can do it, and they were the gopis who couldn't join the rasa dance, we're in the rasa dance. So if they did it, you can do it. You can realize me in my aprakrita form. Okay. So that's what we read from the 47th chapter. Actually, the second half of that chapter is for tomorrow. You may have already read it, but that's today's homework assignment. Is from verses 38 to the end of chapter 47. And we'll go over that tomorrow. Any questions so far? Yeah.
I wonder why is it that the gopis see Krishna as their lover and cover boy? At the same time, they seem to be aware that he has innumerable extension of all pastimes. The pastimes between one and the deep in Bali. How is it that they have this conception of
both? Right. I mean, by the influence of Yogamaya, supposedly they're unaware of all that. You know, how all this Vedanta philosophy about how Krishna is the source of all expansions of Godhead.
Did they speak about it? Did they speak
about Bali Maharaj? Yeah. They're coming up with all this information that they shouldn't know. Because it's not that they're unaware. It's not that they're ignorant. It's that their knowledge is eclipsed. Just like the example of the sun and the stars during the day. The stars are there. It's just there. You don't see them because the sunlight is so bright. They don't become any less bright. They don't disappear. But they become invisible by being eclipsed by the greater light. So the ecstasy of associating with Krishna in an intimate way obliterates all awareness of his being God. But it's not ignorance, it's just that it becomes eclipsed. They're aware of it, and they can mention it any time. They can explain all about Krishna's expansion. So they know. They know exactly who Krishna is. But they don't think about it much. They're too busy thinking of Krishna in their individual relationships with him. Intimate relationships. Proof. The fact that they can talk about, you know, all the things he did in various avatars. And they can also talk sophisticated philosophy about the super soul, about Brahman. Proves that they're not ignorant of these things at all. They're the greatest devotees, that means they have the most knowledge. But just like the opulence of Vaikuntha is not visible in Vrindavan, even though Vrindavan is more opulent. But the opulence becomes invisible. Similarly, all knowledge is there in Vrindavan. The Vrajabasis are full in all knowledge. But they don't even pay attention to that knowledge most of the time. They can use it, they have it, whenever it's useful. You know, to tell Krishna what a rascal he is, they can tell him so many things, drawing on their knowledge. But normally they have no use for that knowledge. They ignore it. They ignore it, but they're not ignorant. Yeah, not ignorance, yeah.
By their will.
Yeah, well, yes, by their will and by the power of Yogamaya, by the power of the loving relationship itself, they helplessly, you know, become so drawn to Krishna's attractiveness that they and their relationship with Krishna that they forget everything else. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes. The eternal associates of Krishna are always associating with him in his invisible pastimes. So there is no real separation for them. This is the highest level of separation, that you can think that Krishna, you're separated from Krishna when he's right there with you. Yeah, that's insane. It's illogical. But that's what you know, the privileged devotees on the highest level actually experience, separation, even when they're together with Krishna. On one level, they're experiencing the intimate pastimes on the invisible plane, and still they're lamenting in separation. You can call this schizophrenia, whatever you want, but this is the highest level of consciousness, and I can't say much about it because I have no realization of it, but that's how it's explained. You know, our acharyas, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, this is how they explain it.
I'd like to hear a little bit more on the point of renunciation.
Yes.
Explain that, well, they gave up attachment to family.
Yes.
They didn't give up their duties.
Yes.
Their responsibility.
Yes.
And that they are on the highest level of
Krishna prayer. Yeah, yeah. You would think, well, there's so many sannyasis and yogis who actually gave up, actually went to the forest, but these devotees who, you know, didn't apparently give up anything, they're still at home, they're on a higher level.
So there's different levels of pleasing Krishna. Can you understand this in a progressive way? That like sannyasis, they leave their family?
Yeah, but don't think that being a householder is better than being a sannyasi. What is the highest thing for an individual is whatever Krishna wants from that individual. You know, I may not be. This is the fallacy that neophyte devotees make. The best thing is to be a gopi. I have to be a gopi, nothing else. I won't be satisfied with anything else. Therefore, I have to run to Radhakund, you know, and imitate Raghunath Das Goswami cheaply, because I have to have the best thing. That's material consciousness. I have to have the best thing. Whatever Krishna wants from you, that's the best thing. You know, you ignore your actual responsibility in Krishna consciousness and imitate someone else's service. That's just, you know, that's a severe fallacy, and it can be very offensive. So, although, yes, there is hierarchy, you know, the love of the gopis is the greatest, but for you, the best thing is whatever Krishna wants, what service Krishna wants from you. Whatever, you know, we don't know what our sarup is, but we can be told, if we accept any spiritual authority, we can easily be told what Krishna wants from us on any level. Even from the beginning, we can find out what Krishna... This is the power of devotional service. We can know what God wants from us if we simply accept, you know, the parampara, and accept some spiritual authority coming in the parampara. Even I'm coming off the street, I can find out what God wants from me individually, without, you know, having to realize my sarup, even before I do that, just by accepting the chain of authority. Yes, I'm sorry.
Are we supposed
to meditate on the This is our ideal. Is to be engaged fully in meditating on Krishna's pastimes with his most intimate devotees. This is recommended by Rupa Goswami in many places, recommended, but it's there in Upadeshamrita. Yeah, this is the highest perfection for a Gaudiya Vaishnav. But you have to have the Adhikar. You know, you have to, and you know, it's called Lobha, intense greed. But that greed, Prabhupada explains that greed is not something that can be, you can't offer a counterfeit version of that. It has to be the real thing. It has to be real greed. You know, so Prabhupada explains you should be free from sex desire, you know, and other signs that you actually have spiritual attraction. If you're still attracted to Maya, then there's no question of this lobha. So that's the adhikara. If we don't have the adhikara, then we have to practice sadhana bhakti to prepare for it. Yes. So therefore, we should meditate on that.
No,
we should.
That
that's the best thing we could do if we can manage to do it somehow. You can't become a gopi by imagining you're a gopi. You have to actually get an invitation to join the rasa dance. You can't just barge in. Yeah. You have to be authorized to do it, to enter into these, even to think about these pastimes. You have to have the authorization. Now, the blessings from your spiritual master to go ahead. And in our line, we don't have a carte blanche. In our line, we're warned, don't barge into Krishna's intimate pastimes prematurely. First deserve, then desire. Because, just looking at the modern world, most people are very degraded, very unqualified. And we have to, first of all, purify the mirror of the heart before we can actually think of Krishna's pastimes and not be thinking of Maya also at the same time. Not be, making it into something cheap. We're attracted to entertainment, hearing about the mundane relationships of men and women. We shouldn't try to enjoy Krishna's pastimes like we enjoy mundane fiction and so on. So we have to become fit to think about these things. That is by the blessings of those who actually are on that level. Yeah. So Prabhupada may not have been telling us many things, much about these intimate things. And someone else may be talking about them. But Prabhupada was on the level that he fully realized himself. And, he had his own personal realization of these things. Whether he shared them with us or not, that was his kindness on us, that he didn't turn us into sages by giving us prematurely the nectar. He withheld it and instead engaged us in Krishna consciousness in such a way to make us actually qualified. So if we help to carry out the mission of such a devotee, work hard for that, then we get his blessings. All the knowledge that he gave us will bear its fruit, and we'll be able to clean off all the dirt on our hearts and enter into Krishna's intimate pastimes. That's the standard process. That's the process that Uddhava went through. He prayed, let me become a particle of dust at the feet of the gopis. Or rather, he said, I worship the dust of the gopis' feet. And let me become a plant on the outskirts of Vrindavan. And maybe the gopis will step on my head. And by that association, I'll become perfect. Or the dust from their feet will somehow get on my head. He wasn't trying to jump into the intimate pastimes without gaining the authorization first. But that was his goal, but he went about the right way of achieving that goal. Okay, yeah. Yes.
When we will be ready to work, we will know.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
We also find that there is seriously Prabhupada's books, but quite often he doesn't give the technical terms, but he does give the information and he does give the Siddhanta.
Yes.
So that those who are not at a level to enter into that kind of understanding, just to be able to appreciate what Prabhupada says without being damaged in any way.
Yeah,
and those who do know the situation or where it relates.
Yes. But Shukadev Goswami did it the same way. Yeah. Just like in this Brahmarag Gita, he doesn't even tell us who's talking. He doesn't give us an analysis, scientific analysis of it. That's provided by Vishnu Chakravarti. But the Bhagavatam is, in an appropriate, gradual way, revealing all the intimate secrets of spiritual life. But as appropriate, according to our level of realization, we're able to dive deeper and deeper into it. Okay. Okay, so we'll look at the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is in a week, first volume will arrive here. Yeah, a few hundred copies. There's advanced shipment airmail of the first volume. This is Hare Krishna. Seventh chapter, last chapter of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is sort of a at the end of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Gopakumar goes to Goloka, he meets Krishna, enters Krishna's pastimes. And that's the end of the story. But Pariksit Maharaj, in his ecstasy, wants to summarize things nicely by reciting some of his favorite verses from the 10th canto. And that's what the second half of that 7th chapter is. It's just one verse after another that's cited directly out of the 10th canto. But Sanatan Goswami gives his commentaries on each of these verses. His elaborate explanations. Yes? Yes, called the Bhakti Rasayanam, although it's not called that in the book, but it's picked up the title Bhakti Rasayanam. And there's a whole section of these verses that concern Uddhava. Some of them are spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, and other ones are spoken by Uddhava himself. These are verses that we've already read, a lot of them, in these two chapters of the 10th canto. Some of them are from the 11th canto also. But we'll also read Sanatana Goswami's commentary on them. So, starting with text 138. Where is this from? Sorry, it doesn't say. Anyway, this is Krishna to the gopis after the Rasa Leela dance. Krishna confesses that he can't pay back what the debt that he owes to the gopis. Napada yeham niravadya sangyujam swasadu krityam vibhudayushapi vaha yamaba jandurjara Geha Shrinkala Samvrishya Tadvak Pratiyatu Saruna. I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service. Even within a lifetime of Brahma, your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. So, Shivaram Maharaj has written a whole book on this verse. A lot can be said about it, but this is just the introduction to this section describing Uddhava's involvement or his what he learned from the Vrijvasis and especially the gopis. So Krishna told Uddhava, we already read this in chapter 46. Gachodava Rajam Somya Pitror Nakpritim Avaha Gopina Madvyog Adhim Matsande Shire Vimochaya. Dear gentle Uddhava, go to Vraja and give pleasure to our parents, and also relieve the gopis suffering in separation from me by giving them my message. Commentary. The next 8 verses spoken by Sri Krishna to his dear servant and best of advisors, Uddhava, Since what a person says about someone else outside that other person's presence is usually more reliable, an indicator of his true feelings, than what he says to the other's face. Krishna's confidential statements to Uddhava about the gopis confirm that he does feel as indebted to them as he claimed when he was talking to them. The first four of these verses are from chapter 46 of the Bhagavatam's 10th canto, texts 3 to 6. Doing what was most conducive to the gopis obtaining his full mercy, Krishna dispatched Uddhava to convey a message from him that he hoped would pacify the Vrajavasis, who were burning in the uncontrolled forest fire of separation. His message was meant to sprinkle on them the water of his nectarian mercy, and give them a thread of hope of possibly seeing him again. In the first half of this verse, Krishna follows the way of ordinary dealings by asking Uddhava to console his mother and father. In the second half, he directs Uddhava to give special attention to the gopis. The name Uddhava means, what does it mean? Anybody know the meaning of the word? The name Uddhava means festival. So by addressing him but with this name, Krishna implies that the Vrajavasis should be very encouraged just to meet Uddhava. Krishna refers to himself here by the plural pronouns Naha, either because he is feeling proud to be the son of Nanda and Yashoda, or else because he is thinking of Balaram as also their son, and in addition wants Uddhava to be accepted by them just like their son. Uddhava certainly deserves this treatment, since he is amply endowed with pure devotion for Krishna and saintly humility. Therefore, he should give Nanda and Yashoda great satisfaction by his uncontrived skill in delivering Krishna's mercy message. Uddhava is also Soumya. Krishna calls him Soumya. Very mild by nature. Or else, Soumya, because Soumya actually comes from the word Soma. Soumya means like Soma. That means that Krishna is as beautiful as the moon. Soma. And thus, Nanda and Yashoda will be very pleased just by seeing him. The gopis, however, are so deeply troubled by the pain of separation from Krishna that Krishna's own words must be conveyed to ameliorate their condition. Uddhava's finesse alone will not pacify the gopis, or else Krishna is telling Uddhava that it will take his own words, Krishna's own words, with their pleasing tone and special connotations, to pacify both his parents and the gopis. Krishna's mother and father will become happy after hearing his message, but the gopis can only be expected to feel some relief, only some relief from their distress. The degree of their love for him is too great for them to ever feel content in Krishna's absence. So even the perfect spiritual master, what he can accomplish depends on the receptiveness of his disciples. He can't do the impossible. He's God's representative. He has to put conditions on his mercy. It's like Prabhupada asks us, you follow regulative principles, then you get my full mercy. Prabhupada was not free to change the rules. He's a representative of the Sampradaya. So the guru has to say, well, these are the rules, you have to follow them. Similarly, the loving dealings of Prema Bhakti have their rules. There's nothing you can do to placate the ecstasy of the gopis. Krishna himself has a hard time changing the mood of the gopis when they're angry at him and so on. Everything is a tough job for him to placate the anger of the gopis when they're dissatisfied with him. So Uddhava should not expect, as explained here, that he's going to easily win over the gopis just by giving this message. All he can do is try his best. Any comments? Questions? Okay. We'll read the next verse. This is Krishna continuing, speaking to Uddhava from that 46th chapter. Ta man manaska mat prana madarte chakta daihika mameva doitam krishnam atmanam manasagata ye chakta loka dharmascha madarte tan vibharam yaham. The minds of those gopis are always absorbed in me, and their very lives are ever devoted to me. For my sake, they have abandoned everything related to their bodies, renouncing ordinary happiness in this life, as well as religious duties necessary for such happiness in the next life. I alone am their dear most beloved, and indeed, their very self. Therefore, I take it upon myself to sustain them in all circumstances. Commentary. In this verse, Krishna tells Uddhava why the gopis need to be consoled very carefully. He also explains the obligation he feels toward them and the characteristics that qualify them as the greatest devotees. Because the gopis are always thinking about Krishna, they appear externally as if they were possessed by insanity. Because Krishna is their very life and soul, therefore, whenever he goes any distance away from them, they seem to be on the verge of death. They are living now in separation from him in Vraja in a very desperate condition, with no shelter to resort to other than him. In the past, they made great sacrifices for him as expressions of their unalloyed devotion. For his sake, they gave up association with their husbands, children, and homes. Or these words can be interpreted in another way. If they actually have suffered, sacrificed everything for Krishna, why don't they now come to Dwarka to be with him there? This is a mistake. I should say Mathura, because Krishna was speaking to Uddhava in Mathura. Sorry, this is unedited chapter. This last chapter hasn't been edited yet, so there are some mistakes in it. That Dwarka should say Mathura. Because he promised that he soon would return to Vraja. Due to that promise and the gopis' concern for Krishna's happiness, they did not abandon their bodily responsibilities to their husbands, children, and so on. And they kept dressing nicely with ornaments. Otherwise, they would have simply walked away from their families and cast away their fine clothing and the jewelry that Krishna had sent them to them from Mathura. They have no attachments at all for any of these. The gopis continued living as they used to live, holding on to the hope that Krishna eventually is going to come back because he promised he would. Therefore, they kept on serving their families, and they dressed nicely and didn't simply wander off to the forest to kill themselves. Continuing, for Krishna, the gopis put aside all hopes for success in this life and the next. They abandoned their both loka and dharma. Those are the two words in the verse, meaning expectations of material and spiritual happiness. Because they are so perfectly surrendered to him, Krishna confesses, he takes it as his duty to maintain them, give them strength, and assure their happiness. Not just keep them alive, but keep them happy. That Krishna considers that's his duty. It's It's only fair in reciprocation. Krishna alone is the real source of happiness for the gopis, and their real protector, much more than their husbands. Therefore, Uddhava should oblige his request and carry his message to Vraja. So we should just think that Krishna is our only source of happiness and our only protector. We may not become gopis overnight, but we'll attain whatever our perfection can be. We'll attain it if we simply think this. Yeah. Krishna raksha siti vishwaso goptutve varanam tata. Yes. Yes.
100% devoted to Krishna and 100% Krishna's instrument.
Yes.
So then, my question is, how is it that the gopis see their husbands as separate from Krishna?
As separate from Krishna.
As separate? Because if they couldn't meditate on Krishna, from my humble limited understanding,
as Krishna?
As Krishna.
They're Krishna's shadows, right? Yes, everything's Krishna, and therefore they should serve everything. But Krishna has his different parts. You know, you serve his shadow in one way, you know, his face in one way, and his shadow in another way. So, their husbands are Krishna in a sense, but they're Krishna's, you know, backside, his shadow. So they should run away from their husbands and go to Krishna. Yeah. 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 I mean, everything is, there's no Maya in the spiritual world. But still, there are transcendental distinctions. There's transcendental variety. So, you know, you serve Krishna, everything's Krishna, you serve everything, but there's, you serve everything in particular ways. The, even on this earth, someone may have transcendental vision. He sees the super soul in everybody's heart, and therefore he sees all living beings equally. But if he's, you know, if he meets a tiger on the road, he doesn't, unless he's stupid, he doesn't embrace the tiger. He can show his, you know, offer his dandavats from a distance. Yeah, so we have to distinguish. Even in the spiritual realm, we have to, you know, there are distinctions, practical distinctions. It's all Krishna, but it's Krishna's varieties of energies, and you don't deal with them all the same.
Yes. It's the past time here, and then Mahaprabhu's Leela in Mayapur as Nima is that Satyamata gave him space, he started eating dirt.
Yes.
Yes. And then he protested when she tried to.
It's all the same.
Yeah, he said, you know, what's the difference? But Satyamata explained, you make distinction.
Yes. He was actually teaching that to his mother, you know, by doing the absurd thing. Yes. And then, you know, in Vraja, there's the pastime of there being the wives of the gopis, and Srimati Radharani has her family who are apparently not very friendly to Krishna. They're trying to keep her away from Krishna, and they seem like nasty people. And you go to Yavat, and all the water is bitter. It's a bitter place. But it's part of the pastimes. That bitterness and these nasty, apparently nasty people who are against Krishna, they're part of Krishna's entourage. That adds to the ecstasy of the pastimes. You know, just like you put a, you know, you have a feast, and there's, you know, karela, you know, on your plate. But it adds to the ecstasy that you have all six tastes. A little bit of bitterness adds to the enjoyment of the feast. So in the context of the pastimes, it's perfectly appropriate and increases the ecstasy that you've got these characters who are trying to keep Krishna from, you know, Radharani from Krishna. So they are. They are Krishna's energies. And they're adding to the ecstasy of the pastimes. Okay, so I just continue reading. Krishna alone is the real source of happiness for the gopis and their real protector much more than their husbands. Therefore, Uddhava should oblige his request and carry his message to Vraja. The pronouns ye and tan in this verse are here in masculine forms. It's talking about the Vrajabhasis, but in the masculine. Actually, he was talking about the gopis, but somehow he's using the masculine form here. Because any devotee who has such pure love deserves this protection from him, whether that devotee be a woman or a man. The gopis, nonetheless, have unique qualifications which they manifest through their womanly nature. They have made the supreme sacrifice for women of abandoning for Krishna's sake their social connections, loka, and their female qualities, dharma, of shyness and chastity. Because we the previous interpretation, we talked about loka and dharma to mean expectations of material and spiritual happiness. Here's another meaning, a different meaning of loka and dharma. In connection with the gopis as women, loka is their social connections, and dharma are the woman's virtues of shyness and chastity. Uddhava may be worried. Since the gopis have abandoned everything, that they must be wandering aimlessly in the wilderness, and he may not be able to locate them. Furthermore, having rejected all social ties, they must have become like ghostly, haunted, mad women. How then will he be able to reason with them? Krishna assures Uddhava that although the gopis have abandoned loka and dharma for his sake, he nonetheless watches over them and protects them. The gopis have rejected their own worldly and superworldly benefits, but he continues to arrange for these to be provided to them. When Uddhava reaches Vrindavan, he will find the gopis in their homes with their husbands and children, and in a sane state of mind. What is more, even the husbands and children whom the gopis have mentally abandoned continue to be provided for Krishna personally. Even their husbands and children are being provided for by Krishna. There is no need to worry that the gopis' families are not being cared for, or that the community has ostracized their husbands for their wives' abandonment of religious principles. Krishna is protecting the gopis' families, and of course he is protecting the family's Krishna consciousness. Thus, since Krishna provides through his personal energies for the bodily needs of the gopis' husbands and children, what doubt can there be that he maintains the gopis themselves? He supplies the gopis' worldly needs, loka, maintains the integrity of their religious duties as women, stri dharma, and keeps them strongly engaged in that which interests them primarily, the higher dharma of Nam Sankirtan and the other essential aspects of his devotional service. That's another meaning of dharma, the basic practices of devotional service. This is the gopis' real business: hearing, chanting, glorifying, remembering Krishna. They're the most advanced devotees in that aspect also. If we take the liberty of adding the prefix a to the word chakta, because it says they abandoned all these things, but let's add the negative particle a to it, another meaning of the last two lines of this verse can be derived. The gopis have not abandoned their worldly responsibilities, loka dharma, and they did this only for my sake. The gopis did not abandon because they, for my pleasure, they kept carrying out their responsibilities. They stayed with their families. Therefore, dear Uddhava, because you are practically my equal, you should go to Vraja. You should make not only the gopis happy and protect their sanity and natural humility, but also do the same for their husbands, their children, and everybody else. Okay, that's one verse. The next verse, again, still spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. Maita prayasam preshte duraste Gokula Striyaha Smarantiyonga Vimuhyanti Viharod Kantya Vihwalaha. Dear Uddhava, for these women of Gokula, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Addressing his friend Uddhava with deep concern for the gopis, Krishna tells him that he has never seen in anyone such distress as the gopis are currently suffering, nor has he ever heard about such misery in any historical or literary account. At every moment, the gopis are so beside themselves in the bewilderment of separation that they seem ready to leave their bodies for the abode of death. Generally in this world, a person's spouse, children, and friends are very dear to him. More dear, as a rule, is one's own body. More dear than the body is the vital air of life. And more dear than life is dharma. More dear than dharma is moksha. And more dear than moksha is pure devotional service to Krishna. Krishna bhakti finds its perfect fructification in unalloyed prema. And because the gopis are more advanced than anyone else in Krishna prema, they are more dear to the Supreme Lord. They're most dear to the Supreme Lord and his devotees. For the gopis, however, Krishna himself is the absolutely most dear object of attraction. When he has gone far away to Mathura and is remaining there, the gopis drown in the anxiety of separation, living only by the faint hope of his coming back to them. They become as if insane, unable to think and act in any properly coherent way. They sink into obsessive remembrance of Krishna, thinking about how they used to associate with him, and become so confused and out of touch with external reality that it becomes difficult to verify that they are still alive. The gopis suffer greatly when Krishna leaves them momentarily, but when he leaves Vrindavan for Mathura, they approach the extreme limit of distress. They are then often in so much pain that their minds cannot even function for remembering him. Krishna calls Uddhava Anga, dear friend, to remind him that Krishna depends on Uddhava's skills as a messenger and counselor to save the lives of the gopis by delivering his message. Next text. Dadayant atikritchena prayak pranan katanchana pratyagamana sandeshayar balavyome madatmikaha. Simply because I have promised to return to them, my fully devoted cowherd girlfriends struggle to maintain their lives somehow or other. Commentary. In the previous verse, Krishna described the condition of the Gokula Striyaha, which can be taken to mean all the ladies of Raja, old as well as young. Now he focuses his attention on the few Vraja gopis who are most dear to him, Sri Radhika and her close companions. As improbable as it seems to Krishna, some of his dear girlfriends among the gopis, like Chandravali and her companions, manage somehow to survive even on the constant verge of death due to the pain of separation. Krishna is ashamed to admit his intention of lying to the gopis, but he has to explain to Uddhava the contents of the message he will be conveying to them. Uddhava should assure the gopis that Krishna will be coming back to them very soon. This should save the gopis from the grips of death, just as it did once before. When Akrura was taking Krishna and Balaram away from Gokula, Krishna brought the gopis' panic under control by sending a messenger with the promise that he would return after only a few days, just like he did. The simple gopis had full faith in Krishna's words So they found in this promise the strength to tolerate the disappointment of losing him. They found solace in the anticipation of again enjoying the beauty of Krishna somewhere in the near future. Realizing how daunting this task seems, Krishna explains to Uddhava that the gopis headed by Sri Radhika have dedicated themselves, life and soul, to him alone. Their souls remain in their bodies only by Krishna's special efforts to keep them alive. They are burning in the fire of viraha bhava, but Krishna is still struggling to save them. As Krishna indicates by the word prayaha, most of the gopis are managing to survive somehow or other, but some of them have actually already died, and others, sad to say, are also going to be lost. Sanatana Goswami says this. As time goes on, and the fire of viraha grows in intensity, it is becoming more and more difficult for the gopis to stay alive. It is actually only by the protection of Krishna's personal power, provided secretly, that the gopis are surviving at all. Krishna does not want to admit this to Uddhava, who might chastise him for preserving the lives of the gopis. If the gopis were allowed to leave their bodies, their suffering would be at an end. But by keeping them alive, their torment is only being extended and increased. There is also another consideration, that the fate the gopis suffer will be Krishna's fate also. Just as the gopis desperately need to be saved, so does Krishna. Therefore, Uddhava should take very seriously his mission of bringing the gopis a new message of hope. For those who are too pained by the elaborate description of the gopis' inner torment, this fourth of the verses of instruction to Uddhava can be interpreted in a different way, more in terms of how Krishna plans to maintain their lives. Two verses before, Krishna gave his assurance that he sustains the gopis through all difficulties. Tan bibarnam yaham. Krishna thus promises to arrange for the gopis' happiness somehow or other. In the current verse, Krishna tells just how Uddhava can help him make this arrangement. The key to keeping the gopis alive is bringing them Krishna's message promising his return. It is practically impossible to save them at all, but by this means, Krishna may be able to keep the breath of life barely flowing in the gopis' throats. Uddhava should visit the gopis and convince them that Sri Nandanandana will be returning very soon. He is already on his way. He is practically here already. Any comments? No? Okay. Should I read some more? There's a few more verses here. Okay. This is it. Jumping ahead to the 11th canto. Krishna speaking to Uddhava, but in the middle of the 11th canto. Ramena sardham maturam pranite shvapalkina mai anurakta chitta vigada bhavena name viyoga tivrada yonyam dadvishutsukaya. Krishna says to Uddhava, the residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with the deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akura brought my brother Balaram and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress because of their separation from me and could not find any other source of happiness. Commentary. The next four verses recited by Parikshit Maharaj to his mother are from Krishna's discussion with Uddhava in Srimad Bhagavatam's 11th canto. These are verses 11, 12, verses 10 to 13. When they were together in Dwarka, Krishna was explaining to Uddhava the great value of associating with saintly devotees of the Supreme Lord. While discussing this topic, Krishna was reminded of the most exalted of all saintly Vaishnavas, his own beloved gopis. Krishna's heart was so overwhelmed by remembrance of the gopis that he momentarily diverted from the topic at hand and spoke these four verses. Akrura, the son of Shwapalka, was engaged by King Kamsa to bring Krishna to Mathura, whatever it took. Krishna was not eager to make this trip, but Akrura exercised his wits to convince Vasudev and Balaram that it could not be avoided. By referring to Akrura as the noble son of Shwapalka, a worthy descendant of the Yadava clan, Krishna is telling Uddhava that the Vrajavasis, including himself, had to excuse Akrura for doing what he was doing. Akrura was only doing what he considered necessary for protecting his clan from the wrath of Kamsa. Lord Balaram was present during these negotiations, and he could have expertly pacified the Vrajavasis as he had done previously, when Krishna seemed imperiled in the grips of Kaliya. For some reason or other, however, he did not make any such attempt at this time. Akrura rather approached Balaram to present the plight of Vasudev, Devaki, and the other Yadus, the fear and anxiety they were suffering because of Kamsa's oppression. Thus Akrura obtained from Lord Balaram Balaram's consent to Krishna's leaving Vrindavan for Mathura. If this had not been accomplished, Krishna probably would have never left Vrindavan. After Krishna's departure, the eyes of the gopis could not find any object of delight to substitute for him. Whatever they looked at only reminded them of Krishna's absence and made them more miserable. With the supreme desirable object removed from their sight, everything else appeared worthless. Krishna's separation was like a persistent headache, making it impossible for them to enjoy anything in life. Even before Krishna left him, the gopis' attraction to him was obsessive, but now it was totally out of control and tormented them like a raging fever in the brain. They experienced the rarest kind of ecstasy, in which nothing around them seemed capable of being a source of happiness. Remember, this is ecstasy. That is not something we can easily understand. Uddhava might wonder why the gopis, whose wisdom is honored by the most learned of sages, continued being attracted to Krishna even after he had caused them so much mental anguish. Krishna's answer is that the gopis' love for him was extremely intense. Nothing can impede their love, not even his mistreatment of them. As sage Parashara describes, Satata saha gopi bi Rama Madhusudanaha Yatab Dakoti Patima Kshanas Tena Vinabhavat. Madhusudana gave so much delight to the gopis that later, when he was absent from them, a moment seemed as long as 10 million years. This is a verse in the Vishnu Purana. Parashara was describing to Maitreya the gopis' separation some years after the fact, and thus he used the past tense in the verse. The word gopi, as used in this verse, can be analyzed as meaning gash, panti, those who protected their senses by keeping them away from material objects. The gopis were actually the greatest of self-controlled yogis, but Krishna's charms so entranced them that they became entangled in loving affairs with him and suffered as the result. Madhusudana is the name of a famous bee, well known for his rapacious appetite for collecting honey from many flowers. This Madhusudana has taken away and ruined Sudayati, all the honey, madhu, of the gopis, all their attractiveness, enjoyable qualities. Attractive, enjoyable qualities. He has stolen everything they own. Krishna confesses to Uddhava that this is simply the way he is. He likes to attract all sorts of people and exploit them for his own pleasure. Then, when he has enjoyed them to his full, he goes away and leaves them in a miserable condition. Okay, so you sure you want to be Krishna's devotee? Then when he has enjoyed them to his full, I'm sorry, I meant that, Krishna may have instructed Uddhava to say in the message he was carrying that Krishna suffered as much in separation from the gopis as they did in separation from him. But the facts prove that this not to be the honest truth. The gopis are surrendered to Krishna with absolute dedication, as Krishna will describe in the next two verses. Krishna, however, is not nearly as surrendered to them, as proven by his confession to Uddhava. Krishna may have a high reputation as the most exalted of saintly persons, but in his opinion, expressed in these verses, the gopis are actually much more virtuous souls than himself. They have no trace of cruelty or ingratitude in them, and their pure love for him is not to be found anywhere else. So this is Sanatana Goswami. He can say these things. Otherwise, to make such audacious statements, nobody has the right. But this is someone who knows the actual facts. And this is what Uddhava learned when he visited Vrindavan. This extreme level of dedication to Krishna, in which life seems to become totally a disaster, but actually that is the greatest ecstasy. Okay, any comments on that? Yes. Opposite. Yes.
We can see our Prabhupada is great because it's just think that you have to listen to this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what Prabhupada is teaching us, the essence of the instructions of these most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the servants of Krishna, the six Goswamis, that they are themselves direct servants of the principal gopis. If anybody knows the actual intimate science of Krishna consciousness, it's them. And Prabhupada is giving us, maybe without all the technicalities, maybe he's making it understandable to our feeble brains, but he's giving us the essence of what Jiva Goswami just explained, what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explained, what Sanatana Goswami explained. How can anybody find fault in this? You know, nobody can claim that we don't have the real thing in ISKCON. Not if we actually look. You know, we may not be feeling the taste, but that's our fault. It's there. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
It's just one thought I was having yesterday. How that in the Vedic times, responsibility and duty were more prominent, and they were more qualified for that. They were very more strict and set in their specific duties in society and for religious duties.
Yes.
So, and I was also thinking that how is it that process of bhakti has become prominent in the message. So
yeah, because we're much less qualified. Why are we being given the essence? This is Krishna's special kindness.
Well, I was also thinking today when you were speaking about the gopis' special qualities, giving up attachment to family, to duty, to responsibility.
I was thinking, would this kind of bhakti process be possible in that age? I don't know much about that. It's harder. You know, it's not hard to give your family if you have no attachment.
Yeah.
You know, just walk around since you don't have much sense of responsibility anyway. But when you have a strong sense of responsibility,
yeah,
then to violate the principles and to abandon your family, that's a big sacrifice. Okay, but what matters, what Krishna sees, is how much sacrifice you're making. He looks at us, the fact that we're trying to live like civilized human beings at all is a great accomplishment. That we can follow four regular principles on the chanting of Hare Krishna, it's a miracle. Yeah, that we can do any service at all, considering our background and our conditioning. And so that's judged by Krishna as a great sacrifice, a great offering of love that we can do anything for him, considering who we are. We can feel the separation. We can be trained up how to feel that separation. We're already separated. That's no problem. Yeah, we're not in the unfortunate situation of the Yadavas who saw Krishna every day and couldn't appreciate him. We have no problem being separated. We've been separated all our lives, and you know our tendency is to stay separated from Krishna and think about everything else but Krishna. So we have a good opportunity. Yeah. Now, all the conditions for feeling separation from Krishna are there. The actual separation is there. We just have to be trained up how to actually feel, you know, actually realize our situation. Yeah. Hari hari vipalit janama dainainu. I've wasted my life and not remembering Krishna. So we've already done that. So we just have to become educated to understand our situation. Then we can actually rise to that highest level of realization. It is, in a way, an advantage to be separated from Krishna. To be in a fallen condition. It's something to feel separated about. Someone who's a proud Brahmin, you know. I'm worshipper of Narayan, I'm a great Brahmin, I'm connected with Vedic culture, I'm fine. You know, how is that person ever going to feel the depths of separation? He's proud. You know, so we're already fallen, so therefore it'll be easier for us to feel helpless. Okay? Right. Anything else? Okay, so we'll continue this tomorrow, discussion of Uddhava's encounter with the gopis. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.